At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Just Interesting podcast, the show where we aim to discuss things that we find, well, just interesting.
Very dramatic. I love it.
Very dramatic. Dramatic pause yeah. there.
Wow. And,
wow.
Beautiful.
And we're back with me and Martin. How are you this week, Martin?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. Not too bad. I did say I had a nap before we jumped on here. So I'm maybe a little bit blurry-eyed, but I needed it. I needed it to be able to discuss the topic we're discussing today. I'm refreshed, hopefully.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And how was mining for whiskey in Scotland?
Yeah.
Whiskey mining last week. That's why you went on, wasn't it?
It was, do you know what? It was lovely. I know I was in a penal colony mining for whiskey. And, you know, I did the crime, so I had to, you know, pay the fine. But or do the time, rather. But it was lovely. It was like a little away camp, and you were just mining, and then suddenly you could just pry beautiful bottles of Lagavulin and other whiskies from the rocks. So it was perfect. It was a great, great summer fun in the sun.
I mean, that's going to confuse a lot of people because, I mean, even I struggle to remember the joke we made for you not being here last week.
Yes, yes.
And it's about, what are you talking about? Mining whiskey in Scotland? That makes no sense. No, it was a joke about why Alex wasn't here last week.
Doom in the comments is actually asking an interesting question. They say, why are the three of you never together anymore? It's beginning to feel like a messy divorce. Well, to tell you the truth, we've been trying to hide it from you, but that is true.
Have you ever seen us all in the same room?
Martin and Robin are actually the same person. No, fingers crossed. We've got word from Mr. Robin, and he should be joining us this podcast, so he should be around for the main topic anyway. Mm-hmm. And we should, fingers crossed, notice I'm saying should a lot, hopefully be doing a quiz this week. So stay tuned, Robin will be tuning in shortly, I'm sure.
Might pop his head up out of the parapet. Are you doing the quiz this week, Alex? I can't remember.
I bet you're relieved to hear me say that. Yes, I am doing the quiz, Martin.
No, you are. Am I? Yeah.
Wait, you've got a quiz, right?
100%, mate. 100%. All up here.
No. I've got the quiz this week. So fingers crossed. If Robin is able to join us, then it will be you versus Robin. And to be honest, Martin, we've really got to decide when we're going to end this season because you're getting perilously close to me now in terms of score. If you beat Robin today, then we'll be tied.
Yeah, you've probably got about 30 games in hand though, haven't you? Or games in hand, sounds like I'm talking about football. You've got a lot of credit in the bank of times that you've hosted the quiz, which I'm very thankful for. So I probably need to host about 10 in a row to get us back on level terms in terms of how many quizzes we've done.
I understand
that is the case. And so I'll batch cook a whole load of quizzes. Help us out. So talking of batch cooking, well, that's just probably a bad segue, isn't it? What we're talking about this week is the global food crisis that's going on in the world. So we're talking about that a little bit later. But before we get onto that, shall we discuss what we have learned this week?
Absolutely, yeah. Have you learned anything interesting this week? I've also been asking people in the comments to share with us any interesting facts that they've learned this week. And if you're listening to this at a later date on a podcast platform of your choice, you can always catch these live streams live on our YouTube channel by following Just Interesting on YouTube. And you may be able to interact with us live if you're fortunate enough. But is there any interesting facts in the comments before we go on to us?
Good question.
Three Hole Punch Mike says, Hello, guys. First time catching a live stream actually live. Only fact I got is Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul viewer numbers are the exact opposite. Breaking Bad had low numbers at first and grew. Better Call Saul is the opposite. Do you watch Better Call Saul, Martin?
I've seen like the first two episodes. I want to go back to it. It's just about time, isn't it? It's about
So you are a prime example of this trend.
Dropping off very early. I'm not surprised though. Like Breaking Bad got a bit of a cult rep, didn't it? Over time, it grew into something.
Yeah, it had five seasons to develop.
Yeah. Exactly. And Better Call Saul, everyone had the expectation. And then, of course, I mean, I'm sure it's very, very good. But yeah, I guess interest just kind of dwindles, doesn't it? Usually as time goes on.
It's a different show, isn't it? So fans of Breaking Bad aren't necessarily going to carry across. But I really like Better Call Saul. I haven't seen any of the new season yet. But
You have seen a lot of it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm up to date except for the new season. Yeah. But anyway, Martin, I digress. What have you learned this week? Yes.
Well, mine seems very trivial considering we're talking about the global food shortage. And but anyway, it's to do with the
Don't worry, mine is also very trivial as well.
Is it as trivial as the Teletubbies?
Go on. I love the Teletubbies.
I'm interested to know in the comments, is the Teletubbies a thing elsewhere? It's British. I'm pretty sure it's British.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it British?
Yeah.
Yeah, does it transcend national borders?
Have you heard of the Teletubbies if you're not from the UK?
Yeah, let us know. Anyway, I think I was a little bit too old when the Teletubbies came out. But anyway, the Teletubbies was incredibly popular here in the UK, wasn't it? Can you remember all the different names of the Teletubbies and the colours, Alex?
Tinky Winky. What? He was like a blue purple. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it Dipsy, the green one? Dipstick? Dipsy? What's his name?
Dipsy.
Lala.
I think Dipsy was green. Lala. It was either the green or the yellow ones, the ones people get confused. Yeah. I think that's right.
And then Poe was red, the small one on the end.
Yeah. And there's always rumors flying.
Don't test me on my Teletubbies knowledge, Martin. You will lose that battle. This quiz is going to be exclusively Teletubbies related questions.
The whole thing, a Teletubbies.
The whole
quiz.
Thing, yeah.
So Teletubbies finished up its original series, finished in 2001. And so basically the place where Teletubbies was filmed with all of the, I guess, the sloping hills, it was a bit of a set, wasn't it, of course, but with the grassy hills, was a place in Warwickshire called Wimpstone, probably, it's British.
Okay.
And so in the years afterwards, you know, when after just, you know, post peak Teletubby time, this particular site was flooded with tourists. You know, people would come here, they'd want to take a look at where it was filmed and the, you know, the rural spot and all of this kind of stuff.
Oh, we ruin everything, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Tourists flooding to see where the Teletubbies.
Tourists flooding to see the Teletubbies site. What age were these tourists?
Well, they've got to be old enough to be able to jump fences and cross cattle fields. You know, these were you know, naughty tourists. They were basically messing around with the agricultural land. And so the owner of the particular site, and I did say flooded with tourists quite aptly, because the owner, a woman called Rosemary Harding, actually flooded the fields where it was where it was set so that people couldn't enter the place and couldn't mess up with the agriculture. And so she actually went whole full Karen and flooded the whole place so no one could come and see it. So there we go. That's my story this week.
I can't believe that was actually a real place. I in my head, like, it just seems such like a set, like a TV set.
I imagine most of it is, right? Surely.
I can't believe like there was actually a real field that they could flood.
There were like two bits though, weren't there? There was like the bit that definitely looked like a set, and then it kind of cut away, I think, to them just like playing around on grass.
Yeah.
And I imagine that the kind of the grassy bits were potentially filmed on this field, and maybe the more constructed bits were elsewhere.
I mean, I wonder what was there that was like made people want to actually get onto it and see it, because if it's just a field, they could do that anywhere.
Well, that's it. But a lot of things are kind of this was where X was so many years ago. Yeah. People do all sorts of nonsense like that.
People ruin everything. Well, people in the comments have said that they did have Teletubbies in the States. Christina Dalen says, had it there in the States. Someone also asked, I can't remember who it was. Oh, yeah. Jimmy Sprinkle says, we def have the Teletubbies here. Did you guys also have the sun with the baby's face? Yes, we did have the sun with the baby's face. Yeah. It's a core component, yeah.
Yeah. There was an article that came out a couple of years ago from the person that was the little girl that was the sun in the original series. Just about her telling her friends at uni and everyone not believing her. So if you get a chance to type in "sun from the Teletubbies now" or something along those lines, it's, you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's an interesting read, but it's something, you know, see what she looks like now.
That's a pretty cool it's a pretty cool party story, isn't it? Although it's not if no one believes you. I was the sun from the Teletubbies, so
that's true.
Yeah, pretty big deal.
That's true. Kind of a big deal.
So my fact this week is not quite the same as the Teletubbies fact, Martin, but I learned a little something about a type of salamander and an interesting way that this specific species of salamander reproduce. So there's a unisexual mole salamander, which is an all-female complex of salamanders, and the way that they reproduce is they steal sperm from other species of salamander and recombine
which
it
species
and recombine it to produce female hybrid offspring, and this form of reproduction has its own name, and it's called kleptogenesis. Klepto, obviously, because they're stealing sperm.
It's so, kleptogenesis.
That is actually a pretty good band name, isn't it?
That's what Phil Collins should have gone for. Forget Genesis. Kleptogenesis.
So the way that this works is male salamanders of other species leaves these packets of sperm. Like I imagine
packets,
them as...
Like crisps.
Like packets of crisps. They just leave them lying about. Called
packets of sperm.
That's
a horrible image.
They're called spermatophores.
On a park bench, a packet of sperm.
And females.
Who's left this here? Sorry, Alex.
So females of the same species would normally pick up and fertilize these eggs. However, these unisexual salamanders pick them up, but they and then go off and steal them instead. And so I just find that's quite interesting. It's like an all, I guess, female species. That is able to sustain itself just by stealing sperm.
There we go.
That's what I learned this week. Something very different. God, you get something. You never know what you're going to get with what we learned this week on Just Interesting. Well, did you just do that, Martin?
No. Of course, I didn't just do a poll in the comment section saying, "Would you pick up a packet of sperm? Vote now."
If you're listening to us on a podcast platform of your choice, then this is another reason why you should follow us on YouTube to take part in these amazing polls that are going out live. So far, 78% of respondents say no, they would not pick up a packet of sperm. So interesting stuff, riveting stuff here on the Just Interesting podcast.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that throughout the whole podcast and see where we end up at the end of it. 83% no. Okay, we'll monitor it along the way. It seems like the overwhelming majority are a no for the packet of sperm picking up, but we shall see.
Good stuff. Very good stuff. Well, I mean, I'm really enjoying doing these podcasts live. I mean, let us know what you guys think of this setup. But I didn't even realize you could do those polls. That's really cool. We'll have to implement that more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But Martin, speaking of interacting with our audience, are there any comments from last week or any comments that you can see in the live chat that you would like to pick up on?
Yes. Yeah. So I had a comment from NanoGlitch. And NanoGlitch says, you got, this is to do with the Natalie Wood unsolved tragedy of Natalie Wood, which we covered in the last episode. And Natalie Wood, of course, died in mysterious circumstances, drowned off a boat on which her husband and also Christopher Walken were on too. And so NanoGlitch says, you guys seem to have an incorrect concept of what a drowning person can do and cannot do. Screaming is not possible while you're actively drowning. It can be difficult to detect when someone is drowning. That it's entirely possible for people even just a few feet away with no walls in between and not even notice, but it would try to be there. But anyway, you get the idea that people can drown without notifying people, which is interesting.
So I'm about halfway through last week's podcast, admittedly, Martin. Yeah. So I may have missed this, but for people that may not know, what was it that you and Robin had said about Natalie Wood?
Oh, we'd said that it was, you know, the standard things of, oh, wouldn't they have heard her in the water? Could she have potentially have screamed and they would have been alerted because they're on a small boat. I'd say that, yes, this is true. The one thing I would say to kind of counter it is there were scratches up the side of the boat's hull, which would suggest that she was kind of at least able to kind of clamber or claw onto the side of the boat.
Yeah.
Which to me, I mean, maybe not. I don't know exactly where the scratches were, but to me that would seem like her head might have been above water at the time, or at least like, oh, help, and then scratching, right? She sounds to me like she didn't sink like a stone in that case, if there were these scratches.
Martin,
so that would be my only counter.
Apologies to interrupt you, Martin, but look who we've got. Look who we've got.
Oh my God.
I've wrecked everything.
Yeah, have not wrecked everything, Robin. You are a beautiful addition. Although there are two Martin Trestings now on the stream.
Oh no, the live stream's got crazy.
But you know what, Robin? That's what you get for turning up late. We're now just double promoting Martin's
late.
Twitter.
So Robin, congratulations. You were found not guilty of the drunk driving accident. So congratulations.
Clearly. Yeah. If he's here. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't wait for the result. I just jumped into a car and drove. Don't know whose car it was. They'll find it eventually.
Oh, my gosh. How are you, Robin? Are you okay? Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for... I'm sorry I wasn't here for the beginning. I missed it, but I was able to tune in to the fantastic intro, by the way, fellas. Thank you. Thank you very much.
What did we say? I can't remember.
Back. you said great things. It was just okay. Professional. That's what it was. Professional quality introduction. I see that Bush says hi, Robin. Hi, Bush. It's all three of us together at last.
So sorry, Robin, just to interrupt you. When you said that, before, I should say to the people in the comments, me and Martin just recorded an exclusive Patreon episode where we just talked about George Bush and the recent gaffe that he did last week, where he mentioned the war in Iraq. He basically kind of unintentionally admitted to some war crimes. Anyway, when you said, hi, Bush, I just kind of imagined that George Bush is watching the podcast.
That would be amazing.
And Robin, completely out of the blue, would you pick up a packet of sperm?
I just saw this poll. Interesting question. Mm-hmm. Is it a sealed packet or an open packet?
Well, why does that matter?
It can be any packet you like.
I mean, yeah, sure.
There we go.
Because if it's just out there in the street, then it's got to go somewhere.
Exactly.
And you are like, I am the one that has to deal with this. The buck stops with me.
Exactly. I like
sperm.
To clean up sperm.
Well, okay, I've got to cut that as a quiz buzzer at some point. That's an amazing soundbite.
Oh dear.
Oh wow. Yep. That would do.
Well,
great.
Well, Robin, before we move on, no pressure at all. But do you have a fact of the week or anything you learned this week?
Ooh, you know, I do actually. I was meeting with a friend of mine who's a historian the other week, and he was telling me about his PhD, and he specialized in newspapers, British newspapers. And he was looking at how they reported the news, and he revealed to me how newspapers in Britain started.
Ooh,
and I thought
it
was fascinating. And basically, newspapers, as we recognize them, like mass media, started in Britain in the 17th century, and their sole purpose was to report on foreign wars for merchants because it affected their business. The way the war in Ukraine is affecting, you know, food supplies and other supplies for car parts and things around the world right now. And that's how newspapers started in Britain. And they started expanding into domestic news because they cared about domestic stuff. Because I was like, well, I know what's going on in my hometown. That's all I need to care about. I need to know what's going on in these foreign wars, which might affect my food supplies. Mm-hmm. But they started reporting on domestic affairs in a major event that happened in the middle of the 17th century, which you may remember involved Oliver Cromwell and Charles I, which was, of course, a big war going on in, across Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and England. And that was very much affecting merchants locally as well. So as soon as they transitioned from reporting on just foreign wars to reporting on a war that was happening on British soil, they started reporting on local news. Not local news, but more local news. And it just kind of grew from there.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, interesting. I guess they can have a more of a quicker feedback on the news as well. It's still news, isn't it? You know, it's not going to take you months to recall what's going on elsewhere around the world, you know,
within Britain. Interestingly, yeah. And that's also when news in Britain started to get very partisan. Prior to that point, it was very neutral. It was about the facts. That's all it was about. But then during the civil wars, obviously some newspapers started reporting how the royalists had won this spectacular victory, whilst at the same time the parliamentarian newspapers were reporting how the parliamentarians had won this spectacular victory. And if you only went by your local newspaper, you'd have a completely different impression on how the war was going.
So the Rupert Murdochs of their day were still at it. They were
they started pretty early.
Well, that's actually interesting to know that partisan news were, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but that it was still going on even at in the very early days of newspapers.
Yeah, it started shockingly
early.
Fake
news is not new at all.
Well, it's like the British Parliament started, and in theory, it had no parties. But within decades, you know, people of like-minded values had clumped together and formed unofficial parties, and then it just became official. So it didn't take long. It doesn't take long for humans to get tribal, does it?
What was the big one before the Conservatives and Labour? What was the...
I think it's the Whigs, maybe?
The Whigs, that's what I'm thinking.
The Whigs, they don't exist anymore. Yeah.
Whigs.
I think the Tories have always existed. As they should have, since they're the Conservative Party. They should always be around.
Well, Robin, you have arrived at the perfect time, because we are just about to move on to our main topic this week. And I'm really happy that you managed to make it here, because I'm sure you will have some interesting insights in this topic as well.
No, I can't promise anything.
Well, we thought it seems to have been pretty prominent in the news this week, and a pretty scary potential in the future that there is a looming global food crisis. Well, I mean, we're currently in the global food crisis, but it's being exacerbated by events going on around the world, namely... Well, I mean, first of all, should we say the pandemic did not help global food supplies. And then, of course, we've got the war in Ukraine. And Ukraine is known as the world's bread bin, I think, because it produces so much of the world's wheat supply. I think between Russia and Ukraine, they produce a third of the world's wheat supply. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And it produces 10% of the world's corn.
And I think it's half of the world's sunflower oil as well, isn't it? Just crazy stat. Yeah.
And I saw a news article this week saying that a food insecurity expert predicts that there's only 10 weeks of wheat supplies left in the world as the Russian invasion disrupts production. And this was Sarah Menke, the CEO of agriculture and analytics firm Grow Intelligence. And she told the UN Security Council that the Russia-Ukraine war was not the cause of the food security crisis, but simply adding fuel to a fire that was long burning. Bread basket, sorry, not bread bin, Ukraine's known as. Bread bin doesn't sound as good.
Although it would last for longer.
That's very true.
A basket is open, it's going to go stale pretty quickly.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah. It reminds me of once putting, I mean, completely off topic, reminds me of once of putting a loaf of bread that I made into a bread bin. It was years ago. I made the mistake of wrapping it in foil. Don't do that. And it kind of gained a bit of moisture. And I went back, like, it can't be more than 36 hours later. And it was crawling. Like, it was like moving because of all the maggots. It was just crawling with maggots. The whole thing was moving. It was the most grimmest thing I've ever had to deal with.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's
it. Didn't take
long. That's mad.
It wasn't long at all. Sorry, that's
and of course, Martin,
things,
you bake your own bread, don't you? So that must have been true.
Not anymore. Sometimes I do.
I bake my own bread all the time.
Good.
I need that Ukrainian wheat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's a pretty rough situation. And the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken this week accused Russia of using food as a weapon. I think Russia recently said, well, there's efforts ongoing to reopen the kind of sea channels from Ukraine to get food exports going again. But since Russia now controls that side of Ukraine, they're only willing to do it once sanctions are being reviewed, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that the world is in a perilous situation at the moment when it comes to this global food crisis? And is there anything that we can do to fix the problem?
Very good question. There is at least one organization offering a potential solution, but we can discuss that in a bit once we've kind of commented on the scale of the problem. I mean, I feel like already, I think most people are aware of the problem because at least in the Western world, prices are going up, right?
Yeah.
That can only mean things are going to get a lot worse.
Have you noticed this? Have you noticed this in doing your local shops? Has food gone up for you? Because I mean... Yeah. Food is going up everywhere, but I think the main kind of people noticing this problem are sadly going to be in, you know, the second and third world kind of countries that are most at risk of this kind of food deprivation. Countries that were not the wealthiest to begin with and have just coming off the back of a pandemic now.
Yeah, I mean, just recently India announced it was going to cease sending, was it rice crops abroad? It was going to basically prioritize all domestic customers first because they're getting so short on supplies. I think Sri Lanka just it's basically collapsing as we speak because it's run out of food. Its political system's just gone into turmoil.
Run out of everything, really, isn't it?
Default on its debts for the first time in its history just the past couple of weeks. So already we're seeing those countries. And I imagine in Africa, we're about to see a domino effect as well.
I mean, according to the World Food Programme, they estimate 49 million people face emergency levels of hunger. And the number of people on the brink of starvation across the Sahel region, which I believe is, where is it, across like Mali, Niger, Chad and Sudan, like that kind of area, I think.
Right.
That has increased tenfold since pre-pandemic levels.
Bloody hell.
Wow.
People on the brink of starvation is massively increasing, and that it's this domino effect, isn't it, of the pandemic, which is incredibly poor timing, of course the war as well, but also global warming and issues around that have been going on for decades. So it's as you said, it's just adding fuel to an already burning fire, but at an alarming rate. And ideally, the world, of course, would come together to release these food supplies from being held in the zone of conflict, especially in Ukraine. But honestly, I mean, as long as that can be held as a political tool, it's going to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we'll see more of this protectionism over food. People will hang on to it for their own populations. I mean, the global supply of food will gradually grind to a halt over the next couple of years, I think, while the war is going on. It's definitely troubling times.
So it'd be interesting to see how it is for nations like Britain, which have become almost the model of the capitalist dream of outsourcing all your primary industries, all the mining, all the farming. We import so much so that we can have a primarily services-dominated economy where people work in offices and have relatively comfortable lives. It would be interesting to see the political dynamics over the coming years as countries like India, like Ukraine, who are the producers, suddenly say, sorry, we're going to prioritize our own people. You can fend for yourselves. And I assume mostly it'll just express itself as a massive economic crisis as the cost of living skyrockets, but it may also express itself as goodness knows what. Maybe there'll be some kind of need to do an emergency kind of World War II style.
Dig for victory, Robin, yeah.
Yeah, dig for victory. We're all going to become land girls and grow grow crops that we haven't grown here for about 80 years because we've relied on the third world to provide us our food.
I think that may be a genuine possibility. I don't want to be alarmist or hyperbolic, but you're the maybe thinking like longer term, not just at the effects of the war, but yeah, climate change. Countries are going to be increasingly inward looking and focusing on their own population, that when they can no longer like export additional foods, that's what they're going to do. They're going to prioritize their own population. So we are going to have to start thinking about that. What have we got an abundance of? Potatoes, isn't it? That's our main
whiskey mining.
That's true. Yeah, whiskey mining.
But I think potatoes is our main like grain over here, isn't it?
Is it? Okay. I know. I grew up in Lincolnshire, and the fields around me were always full of
sausages.
They were full of sausages. Yes, sausages grown.
Lincolnshire trees. Sausages. Well, yeah.
I mean, Lincolnshire is, I think, has a third of the country's pigs.
Really?
Or at least they used to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember this fact because at least in South Lincolnshire, where I grew up, I never saw a single pig. You know, you go driving through the countryside, it's like, where are all the pigs? But I think, well, I guess they're mostly in North Lincolnshire. But there are a lot of pig farms in Lincolnshire. But yeah, the fields around me were mostly onions, I think cabbages, and oilseed rape. So I hope they had potatoes. I only noticed the onions because they stank to high heaven.
Yeah, around here, I think it's mainly, as you say, yeah, rapeseed. What do they call that in the US? I can't remember. It's called something else. Don't want any connotations with rape. Yes. And other grains, really, isn't it? Like barley. Barley is quite common.
Yeah, barley must be. All the beer that we drink, barley's got to be.
Yeah. We need barley to make our whiskey and beer.
But I wonder if that will become maybe like barley is, no, we can no longer use it for all the beer that we produce. We've got to prioritize at some point in the future.
It's just hit me. Yeah. Those raw ingredients for beer and whiskey are going to make beer and whiskey even more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should stock up.
That's Robin's takeaway from the global food crisis. Stock up on beer and whiskey. I also saw an interesting article this week about the potential, touching on the subject of using food as a weapon and something that we may see more of in the future. But it was an issue regarding cybersecurity. And a lot of farms, not just in this country, but across the world, are increasingly becoming autonomous, using robots to do a lot of the farming. As farms become bigger, they have to supply far greater numbers of people. So it's natural that farms are turning to automation. Modern smart farm machinery, however, is apparently vulnerable to malicious hackers, and this could potentially leave global food supply chains exposed to risk. So, for instance, if there's an automatic crop sprayer, then a hacker could like just drive this into a ditch or something and take it out of use. And then obviously this could be miles away from anyone and, could really affect the crops by something quite simple. There's not a huge amount of cybersecurity in this area, I think.
That's quite shocking.
It seems to be an area that's open to exploits and weaknesses.
I wonder why that is. You'd thought in this day and age, anybody developing that kind of technology would think about cybersecurity, right?
Yeah.
You'd imagine
that's a very good point.
You'd imagine that there'd be a growing industry for cybersecurity in this space. If people are focusing on your smart appliances, and making sure that they're secure from hackers, surely there'd be a much greater aversion of resources towards this. Mm. Yeah,
That's crazy,
man.
What do you think that food is going to be used as a weapon in maybe like proxy wars, or like how we don't have actual wars between countries as like major countries as much these days? I mean, I know there is a pretty huge war going on right now in the European sphere, but generally like a war between Russia and China might not be fought, or Russia and the US, or US and China may not be fought soldiers fighting each other, but they could be fought by hacking their kind of agricultural sectors. What do you think about that?
100%. It will definitely be a tool that's on the table. We know that Russia, for example, loves its cyber warfare. They definitely would not be above doing that in any kind of war situation, even if it's not total war, I can see them, you know, if they go to war with Britain and we're fighting in, I don't know, Eastern Europe, they would send spies over here to mess with whatever machinery we've got. Mm-hmm. I can definitely believe that. I also think, to a certain extent, you ask about it in specifically relating to the technology, which, by the way, I didn't know that this technology existed for farmers. It kind of makes sense, but in my head, that's still like 1990s sci-fi movie fiction.
It's Interstellar, isn't it? Interstellar.
Oh, yeah, with all the drones. Yeah. So that aside, we've already got that. So obviously, the economic sanctions, right now, they're broad. They're not targeting the food, but we're using them as a weapon against Russia in the war in Ukraine. And then, of course, for the last few decades, North Korea has been completely cut off from imports from any country except China. And China does it secretly. And if, imagine if China just stopped. Already, food is used as a weapon against North Korea. Now there's just a more sophisticated, targeted way of doing it, which is to mess with the machines that farm the food. Although I suppose you could argue there's an easy solution. Not necessarily easy solution, but a simple solution, which is the machines aren't working. Let's just get the tractor out or get the farm laborers out. Mm. Let's employ our own people to do the job of these machines.
I mean, do you think there could even be a worry in the future? Like we kind of say how the average person now has no idea how to procure food if the worst came to the worst. We don't know how to farm. Mm. We don't know how to raise livestock or slaughter animals. Mm. We're kind of at the mercy that these things will just be provided to us. Maybe in the future, these automated farming equipment will become so prevalent on farms. People won't even know how to farm if these things...
it's true. Yeah.
If these things break down, they won't know how to use the traditional equipment. Although that, I'm sure, is decades, if not centuries away from becoming
a problem. That could happen. But what defines a farmer is their ability to program a farm vehicle.
Yeah.
I could tell it to go in a circle. I don't know how to actually plant the seeds.
But also the reason they're using this equipment is because they've got to provide more crops and food to more people, that it's just not feasible to do it by hand unless you had a huge workforce, which a lot of these farms don't.
They can't sustain the cost of employing that many people.
Yeah.
Because we expect food to be so cheap. Yeah.
I mean, it does seem like the natural progression, therefore, is that food prices will continue to rise globally. Mm. Hopefully, you know, if people aren't being paid enough to want to work on farms, I mean, the technology is one way to go. But I know that here in the UK has been a huge drive, hasn't there, for people to come back to the UK from other European countries or stay in the UK and farm. Right, it's been one of the issues with people coming over to the UK, wasn't it, from Ukraine as refugees? It was like, are they going to come over and you know work for this country? Which is, it's a bad way of looking at it, but. But that was one of the you know, Priti Patel was very much interested in making sure that people coming over were adding to the economy in this particular way. Hopefully, I mean that, you know, farmers are paid more and paid fairly as a result of this. But, you know, we shall see. I mean, back to the point of food being used as a weapon. I mean, we can see it already with what Russia's doing around like the Black Sea coast and stopping the shipping lines. And blocking the Ukrainian ports from releasing a lot of their goods, which are then going to waste. So it's already being used as a weapon of war. And I mean, it's almost like a cyclical issue where, you know, if there's wars between nations because of a lack of food, then food therefore gets blocked as a weapon of war, which then causes more issues with lack of global food supply, which then causes more conflict. And so there could quite easily be a bit of a spiraling effect, a bit of a race to the bottom here, where we see more conflict globally as a result of this kind of reactionary, you know, governments reacting to a lack of food by being more insular and preventing people from exporting food, and then that of course then causes more conflict. So I don't know. We're in perilous times. And
a filthy casual in the comments, this is relating to what you just said, Martin, says, I can't remember who the quote was from, but I recall hearing, we don't have a global food production problem, we have a food distribution problem. And that also does sound familiar. I think I've heard that quote before. And I think he's kind of right. Like, that's
Yeah,
it's more like if we all kind of work together, there would definitely be enough food for everyone. But it's obviously it's distributing it and getting it to the right people. It sounds a bit corny to say, but if we all work together, we could do this. We'll be fine. There's an abundance of food around the world, but it's just getting it into the right hands.
I think in 2018, the UK produced 9.5 million tons of food waste. And 70% of that was intended to be consumed, but people just chucked it out.
Wasn't there a huge scandal over the pandemic? Because there was, didn't a bunch of pigs or livestock have to be slaughtered and just went to waste because there wasn't any workers there?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
There were loads of images as well of gallons and gallons of milk being poured down drains. I don't know if you remember that too. Hundreds of thousands of gallons of milk being poured by farmers because it wasn't going anywhere, mainly because a lot of industries were closed, like coffee shops, and that tends to be where most of their milk gets distributed to. Mm. And so there's huge waste.
They have pre-existing contracts, don't they, with a lot of those industries, and they have to supply it to those businesses, but they weren't able to just give it to the supermarket. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's it. It's understandable why it has to be a business, really, for the provision of food to work. It has to be formulated like an industry. But when you formulate it like an industry, it means anything exceptional happens, like a war or a pandemic, where people aren't going into shops, and suddenly all this waste happens because the strictures are there to stop them being able to just provide it to people.
So is there any hope? Is there any hope on the horizon that we can avoid the worst effects of this global food crisis, which we are no doubt in currently, and it's only looking like it's going to get worse? It's pretty bleak at the moment, but is there any hope on the horizon?
Well, it's tough, isn't it? I was going to say, like,
no.
I think on an individual level, simply not wasting as much food as we do would make it go a lot further, and that. I'm really pointing my finger at our households, but mainly also businesses. Like, there are people who do not have enough money to buy food at the moment, and it's only getting worse. We're having to prioritize other things, and going short of food, making sure that isn't being thrown away by businesses, and ensuring that there are, means by which it can be redistributed if it's not being used by certain industries or certain people. Logistically it's tough, but it should be an easy fix in regards to, redistributing food. So that's one on kind of like a more regional level. But a lot of this, especially when it comes down to the war in Ukraine, Russia, that's about them sorting their shit out and seeing the bigger picture of, okay, this could actually affect millions and millions of people, could starve to death as a result of a worsening food crisis. Then, of course, there's actioning on global warming. We've got to get a hold of that, otherwise this is only going to get worse. So there are macro issues that need to be dealt with, of course, the government level.
Global
from a personal level, redistribution's at least a step in the right direction.
I think even a very optimistic point of view with regards to global warming, even if we manage to get our shit together now, pretty much, I think the estimate is it would still be a 1.5 to 2 degrees level of warming by the end of the century, right? Like, that's the very optimistic.
Yeah, it's too late to stop it getting.
Yeah, that's a very optimistic level. And I think 2 degrees is still going to involve mass migration, huge, massive global changes in terms of agriculture. So, it's going to be interesting. But
And Recu97 in the comments says, Finland makes enough food for itself. The problems are fuel and equipment for making it. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's not just about the creation of food. It's, oil and gas, of course, have increased massively in price, and also fertilizer. And a huge amount of that comes out of Russia and Ukraine as well.
Yeah.
And so that, of course, has a knock-on effect. There's so many components in the creation of food. It's very difficult to just be like, okay, we can be kind of protectionist and insular and look after our own country. You are reliant on that global production of all the different things needed for agriculture. Yeah. So it's tough.
Well, the World Bank has announced a 4-point plan to tackle the food crisis globally.
4-point plan.
Four-point plan,
four plans, and we are back in business.
They say, they point out, they already have an existing $18.7 billion invested in projects which connect to food and nutrition security problems, covering agriculture and natural resource management. But they've just announced they're going to make fund $12 billion worth of new projects for the next 15 months to deal with the food crisis. And they're going to do this in four ways. They're going to support production and producers by removing input trade barriers, focusing on more efficient use of fertilizers, repurposing public policies and expenditures to better support farmers and output. They're going to use this money to facilitate increased trade, which is to avoid export restrictions that increase global food prices and import restrictions that discourage production in developing countries. They're going to scale up targeted nutrition-sensitive social protection programs for the most vulnerable households. And they're going to invest in sustainable food and nutrition security, which is to strengthen food systems to make them more resilient to rising risks such as conflict, climate change, pests and diseases, and trade disruptions and economic shocks. They're trying to balance immediate and short-term needs with long-term investments. Sadly, they point out that they had to do this back in 2007, 2008 during the recession.
Yeah.
But the good news there is that because they've already done it 14 years ago, they've kind of got the systems in place to do it again. And this time they're promising to do more than they did back then. So, I mean, what do you think? I know I just rattled it off quite quickly, but do you think the World Bank throwing $12 billion at a problem is going to solve it?
I mean, that's it, isn't it? I'm not sure. I don't know enough, to be honest. I'm not an expert on this topic. I don't think any of us are. But I don't know enough to decide whether this is a problem that throwing money at can actually fix, or if it's a requiring a different change of thought with how we live our lives and how we all kind of consume food, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they sound very in-depth ideas. I don't know whether they're going to be effective or not. It seems like, well, people that are paid more than me have thought this through.
A lot of it. Sorry, Mars.
I'm going to say that $12 billion is a lot of money. It's not that much when trying to tackle world food hunger. You know, it's like, yeah,
it doesn't feel like a lot, does it?
Feels like a drop in the ocean, really.
Yeah.
And all the money's everything. Of course, you know, it's all about building the systems that are needed to help the problem, isn't it? More than just money. To me that seems like a very small amount considering the scale of the issue, and it's only going to get worse
unless you can and eat it money seems I like don't some... know how it helps.
It also sounds like some of that money is definitely going to go to the people at the top who they're going to try to just persuade to change their way of thinking. And obviously that's important, like you say, and that's the good thing. Reading the details, the their four-point plan does involve trying to change behaviors, which is good, and trying to change behaviors on a industrial and economic level, not just on individuals. Like we've been saying, individuals need to think about how they use their food and consume food, but also countries and systems need to change. But I'm skeptical that, like Martin says, throwing that much money at a problem is really going to fix it. And particularly when a lot of that money, not all of it, but a lot of that money absolutely is just going to go to paying generous salaries to individuals who will have lots of business suit meetings with other people who'll be looking for their end of the deal to start a program which by the end of 15 months might not achieve anything, you know?
Yeah.
At least they're trying. Yeah. But my skepticism comes from the fact that we know that charities do their best to solve problems in developing countries. And a lot of the challenges they face stem from the fact that the authorities and the layers of authority that exist from the national to the local level skim off as much as they can from the resources charities have. And so the best thing charities can do is literally go out to the village where those starving people are and give them some food and water, or build them a house. Yeah. You know, giving money to set up programs often doesn't, I mean, it does result in change, positive change, but it also often doesn't, because so much gets, it's like pouring a glass of water into seven layers of filters, and it just kind of drips through, and by the end of it you've got a few drops. Yeah. Which help a few people. I'm always I guess it's in my nature to be skeptical of trickle-down systems.
Trickle-down, so that, charity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope it works. I'm glad they're doing something. They seem like they're in a position to do something. They've got the money and they've got the experience from the recession 14 years ago. Mm. But more than that needs to happen, like you say.
I appreciate you putting a brave face on and trying to put a positive spin on this, Robin. This still seems pretty bleak to me right now. But fingers crossed that the world is able to fix this problem before it becomes a huge, huge issue, more than it already is. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to add on this, or shall we?
Well, kind of a response to some of the comments, actually. Doom says, somehow I get the impression Putin doesn't care much about other people. And yeah, I think that kind of hits the nail on the head. Like, you can only do so much, but ultimately you need people, individuals, and particularly the people in power, in authority, to make the change. They need to, you know, man in the mirror it and look at themselves. And, you can do what you can, but if you can't change people's minds.
Mm-hmm. Doom's comment infuriates me. I mean, not the comment itself, but like it's a useful thing to say. But he says, a lot of places throw out food rather than allowing employees or the homeless to take it. It's disgusting. And I guess that's the frustrating thing with food being so linked to industries, I guess, is that they can't just give it out at the end of the day, because then no one would pay for it. They'd wait till the end of the day. And then that doesn't work. But I mean, you're right. Like the system that we have in place creates all this incredible amount of food waste in the name of profit. So I don't know what can be done to combat that.
Matt Quick commented saying food waste costs the global economy $940 billion each year. Jeez. Which is mad. And then just we should call it out. Cozy Martian says, you guys are talking socialism, that's bad. Sarcasm. It's true. We've brought. I feel like we may have brought a slightly one-sided.
This is your influence, one-sided Robin. Perspective. You do this to us.
I don't know. What is the other side like? We're very much just wanting what we
free
want
market,
a solution.
Free market economics
so that people don't starve. The invisible hand. Yeah,
there's no other side to stop people from starving, though, is there? No, people are literally starving. There's no way to. Like, how's capitalism going to fix
it? There aren't really two sides, are there? Yeah.
Well, our government is already mooting cutting taxes.
Unless billionaires just want to help people, relying on relying on GoFundMes, maybe.
Did you see that? This is slightly off topic, but it's kind of related. So there's a cost of living crisis in the UK right now, and it's going to get worse. And they've predicted that by the end of this year, energy bills will be about £2,800 per household. Which must be what, $4,000?
Yeah.
Annually.
Yeah.
And that's mad. That's a huge chunk of people's incomes. And so a lot of people have been saying to our government that one way they could help people, not obviously solve the problem, but help people pay their bills, is to use a windfall tax on particularly the producers of the fuel that goes into heating our homes. And particularly people kept looking at companies like Shell, who recorded record profits in the last year as the economy reopened, and other major oil companies in particular who are making either the highest profits they've made in a decade or record profits that they've never made before, just off the demand for oil. Capitalism at its finest. And our right-wing, almost billionaire chancellor said, I think it was yesterday, said that he was looking at introducing a windfall tax on energy producers, not the fuel providers like Shell, but the energy producers such as wind farms.
Oh my God. Oh, for God's sake.
And you're like, what? How? How is that going to help anybody?
So just to put it in perspective for people that don't know, he recently made the Sunday Times Rich List, didn't he? One of the richest people in the UK.
He did, yeah.
That must have been awkward for him, actually. He must have been like, now's not the time, to be honest. Could have been better timing for this, actually. This isn't helping the image.
Well, it's to do with his wife as well and her wealth, right?
Yeah, she's...
And what's her... I can't remember what her industry is. But he has hands in different pies, let's just say. And so any decision based on this will be probably influenced by his own personal wealth and where he's got his money invested, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also undoubtedly lobbyists who support the Conservative Party, I imagine, are a lot of oil executives and that kind of industry that don't want to see a windfall tax. But hey, we've moved on from the topic, it seems. And now we're just ranting about British politics. As per usual, but
sorry, I only brought it up because it's kind of relevant.
It's relevant. It is relevant because
it's tangentially relevant. Yeah,
because as one of the comments said, the food crisis is also linked to the economic crisis. So the cost of living crisis is very relevant to this discussion as well. Absolutely. Oh, it's all a bit sad, really, isn't it? It's a bit of a sad one. Do you guys fancy a quiz to lighten the mood?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes, please. That would be great.
Nice. Okay. A quiz for the first time in several weeks, I should say.
Woo!
Whoa! Filthy Casuals has given $20.
Oh, what? Filthy Casuals. That's amazing. Thank you. Incredible.
Glad to see all three of you gents back together again. It's been a bit... it's been a bit since. Don't know how much beer costs in the UK, but hopefully this is enough for one each. Cheers. Oh, thank you so much. I think that would cover a couple of half pints, yeah.
Maybe not in London.
A trip down to the local Wetherspoons. Definitely get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Right, fellas, do you have some buzzers for me?
Ooh,
because
so.
We're doing the quiz and
doing the quiz.
We need,
yes,
we need
yes, I'm gonna buzz. I've got
it's
an
been
answer.
So long. Good. When was the last time we did a quiz?
It was a few weeks ago.
It's got to be what, 3 or 4 weeks?
I had an idea in case the two we're ever a twosome again, that we should just do a quiz, but we ask like the other person questions, maybe like 5 questions each, and then they can compete with the audience. Maybe that's what we
like. I like it.
But I mean, that's never going to happen again because it's just the three of us till the end of time.
The three amigos. there we go. All right. Good.
Have we got your buzzers sorted? Robin, have you got a buzzer?
I do have a buzzer.
Apparently, they were quite loud previously. You had comments saying they're quite loud.
Yes.
So if we hold it away from the mics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll assess the volume.
Yeah.
Keep the buzzer away from the mic.
What have you got, Robin?
It's a new one. Maybe you'll remember it though.
About this, the villain that Vincent Price played on the 60s show Egghead. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I want to have a go at Egghead. I think I can make him absolutely terrifying. And I have a concept for Egghead. So let them know over at Warner Brothers, I'm down for Egghead.
Oh, amazing!
Cuts off a bit of that. I'm down for Egghead.
Nick Cage talking about
Nick Cage wants to play. Wants to play Egghead.
Wants to play Egghead.
Egghead.
And Martin, what have you got?
I've gone for a classic. My classic, anyway.
Where are you?
There we go.
That's a great one. Drunk Delia.
Now, was that the right kind of volume for you guys? I turned it down quite...
I thought it was fairly quiet.
It was, okay, cutting out. Do you know what I think it is, Martin? Yeah. I mean, this is a technical thing that we can work out later on. I feel like in Zoom, maybe you've got some kind of automatic thing that cuts out background noise and it's picking it out as background noise.
Oh, we could, yeah.
I think that's possibly...
Got original sound turned off, yeah.
I see. All right, we'll do it after. I'm going to try and figure that out now.
We'll do it after. We'll sort it out.
Before we get stuck into the quiz, you mentioned Alex doing a quiz with just the two of us, and Stein wins, sorry if I've got your name wrong, says, on Twitch, you could add a quiz kit We have discussed this actually. We're planning to do it at some point. We're streaming on YouTube at the moment. So yeah, if we stream on Twitch, we could do a quiz kit. Also says, what happened to Just Interesting on Twitch? And the answer is still there. I did a live stream last week.
Robin did a live stream last week, and I will be doing one at some point very soon.
Yeah, I'm sure we will do more.
But in terms of,
I was hoping to get one done today actually, but didn't. My work got in the way.
But we were kind of test road mapping and testing doing the live podcast on Twitch before. And I think we just decided that they would fit better on YouTube just because that's where most of you are.
And the comments are slightly more the comments on I think on YouTube work better for a live podcast than they do on Twitch.
Yeah.
But the Twitch comments work great for gaming. Absolutely.
Anyway, fellas, enough is enough. Let's jump into the quiz. And as always with these live quizzes, if you'd like to take part in the quiz, then you are more than welcome to. I will accept the first three answers in the comments as a correct answer. I'm not going to keep scores with the commenters, though, so you'll have to keep your own scores. And Robin and Martin, as always, you know the rules by now. Do I need to recap? It's been so long.
There are 20 questions.
20 questions. You're allowed to keep on buzzing in as much as you like. And the first to five wins, I believe.
Yeah, first to five.
Do you know what? It's been so long. I can't even remember if this is the right quiz or if I've done it before. So let's let's give it a go.
I probably won't remember.
If any of these questions sound familiar, then I'm very sorry. Okay.
Okey-dokey.
Question number one. Which swimming stroke is named after an insect? I heard Martin.
That would be butterfly.
It's the butterfly. Of course it is. There you go.
Both hands over at once. Wiggle your body.
Straightforward one.
I just got stuck on breaststroke. And I was like, that's not an insect.
Breast. That's not, not quite.
The comments are rolling in now. I feel like it's a tiny bit late, but the first one in there was Baz Carla with butterfly, Lingam butterfly, and Doom says the famous breast bug. So, I mean, he's already joking about your one. And a filthy casual got in there in third with butterfly. So well done.
Front creepy crawl?
Front creepy crawl.
I think it's naturally called freestyle, isn't it?
Freestyle.
I think that's what they call it, don't they? They don't call it a...
Nah, front crawl.
They call it front crawl.
Isn't freestyle doggy paddle. Like you can do whatever you want? It's just the biggest one you can choose.
Yeah, but I think that's the name that they give to front crawl. They call it freestyle because everyone does front crawl, but that's like the official name of it.
Have you ever swum and done the wasp?
Yeah, man, all the time.
I thought you look like a person to do that.
Freestyle was different though, because didn't Michael Phelps buck the trend by actually doing butterfly stroke when everyone was
freestyle. That's mental. No, it's so much quicker. Front crawl.
No, but
freestyle means any.
I thought he was like the butterfly king. We're getting into something.
Okay. Here we go. Freestyle means that in an event so designated, the swimmer may swim any style, except in that individual medley event.
Just ignore that bit because Alex is right.
Why?
No, that's not right. That can't. It's wrong.
No, it's talking about medley. That's different. Yeah.
Okay.
Why is freestyle? Why is it called freestyle and not front crawl? The most common stroke in freestyle is front crawl.
Sounds a lot like. That implies they could use other strokes.
They can do, but ultimately no one does because it's slower.
Maybe there's an option to not use your hands. You just use your feet.
I don't know. So we're going to have to turn to the comments on this one, I think. But in the meantime,
the term freestyle stroke is sometimes used as a synonym for front crawl. A synonym, Alex. A synonym. As front crawl is the faster swimming stroke.
Okay. I get that. But I thought that Michael Phelps, like, his whole thing was that he didn't front crawl. He was actually faster doing butterfly because his like upper body was so massive or something. I don't know. Maybe he is
incredibly good at butterfly.
Question number two. Which movie won the Oscar for Best Actor, Director, and Cinematography in 2016?
Oh.
I hear Nick Cage.
That's not the answer. Is it The Revenant?
Oh, why do I put these questions in? Robin's always going to get the film questions, isn't he? It is The Revenant. Yeah, yes, definitely. Of course.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio's first ever Oscar win. Interesting one that he won for that. Do you think it was just the Academy felt like they owed him? Or do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he should have won for Wolf of Wall Street. That wasn't much.
That was a very good.
That was just an awesome performance. I mean, The Revenant was a great performance, but that was like where he did the real method thing. Like he ate real. Was it?
Money.
Like
he ate a little.
He ate real money. Like, he ate a liver at some point in the film. He's like, yeah, I ate a real liver and I grew my own beard. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. I really got attacked by that bear. No, he didn't. He didn't say that. But, you know, he went, it was just too physically demanding a role for everyone to be like, yeah, kind of got to give it to Leo now. Yeah.
You know, when your brain goes to a specific answer in the quiz when you're asked a question, no matter how stupid, your brain goes to it, it flicks through like, reminders anyway, flicks through the different options about what it could be. My first thought was stupidly The Artist. Silent.
That was it did not
win Best Music.
It won
actually it did have music,
did
didn't
win
it?
Best Picture and it Best did. Actor, didn't it?
Yeah. They may have won Best Cinematography as well. It definitely got nominated for
2011, yeah. I'm way early.
I saw that in cinema. That was a great great experience.
Yeah, I saw I remember really enjoying that.
I haven't seen it actually.
Okay. Question number three. Oh, I should say in the comments. Doom was the first one in there, and he actually answered it at the exact same time as you, Robin, with The Revenant. And then, but then he had a bit of self-doubt, said, no, I think that was earlier. Oh, I was right. Huzzah. And there's a lesson there. Don't doubt yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You were right. You got it.
I had the same doubt. I thought Revenant, I was like, is it that old already?
Sadly, it is. Sadly, it is. Time's arrow marches
on. Are we that old already?
I think that every day.
Okay, question number three. How is 77 represented in Roman numerals?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have a go at egghead.
I think I heard Martin sneak in there, and I think he's regretting that I'm choosing him.
I just realized that I don't know anything about Roman numerals. I've never properly studied them.
Just had to get in there. Yeah.
So what's 50? I mean, I'm going to, is it done like that? Is it done by 50, then two tens, then? Okay, what 50? I don't know what 50 is, but I'm going to say, what's K? Is that something? K, I'm going to go, okay, this could be wrong. KXXVII.
Okay.
What is K? I don't know what K is, I'm just making it up.
Well, someone in the comments has got it, but so I'm trusting neither of you are looking at the comments.
No.
That is incorrect, I'm afraid, Mark.
Damn it.
Robin?
I think I can make an absolutely terrible.
Can I just, before I give the answer, I'm pretty sure I've got the answer right. Martin deserves half a point for that. He's so close.
If it's wrong, I don't deserve anything.
I was going to let you guess, and I was going to do a kind of closest wins without telling you.
Okay. I think 50 is L.
L.
Not K. Yeah.
Okay, so it's very L. Very close, Martin.
What's K?
XXVII. K is not a thing in neural.
Oh, is it not? Okay.
No.
Yeah. And Robin, I'll decide how the points are awarded. Thank you very much.
Yes, you should, Quizmaster. Yes.
So, Martin, you got it wrong. So that's 0 points for you. I don't have an ulterior.
So close.
I've got a bit of an ulterior motive here, though, because if Martin wins this quiz, then he's drawing with me this season. So.
Is the scoreboard up to date?
That is up to date, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's as up to date as
I can behind.
You are, Robin. But it's closer than I think the impression up to this point was that I was storming away with it, but clearly not.
5-4-3. Yeah, it's quite close, actually. Yeah.
Okay, question number four. Oh, first of all, who got it in the comments? Baz Carla was straight in there with LXXVII. Nice. Three Hole Punch Mike also got it. And Jimmy Sprinkles was the next person to get it. So well done, you three.
Great there.
Well done, well done.
Okay, question number four. Betts cells are found in which part of the body? Betts cells. B-E-T-Z.
Ooh.
B-E-T-Z.
That's the guess.
I can hear Delia.
Let's go for what would have a lot to sell, the brain.
Spot on. Nailed it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's, well,
it's
nice.
The brain. Well done, Martin.
What has lots of cells?
brain. All right.
Okay, cool.
What? How does one identify a Betts cell from its neighbors?
Was that a shot in the dark, Martin? No,
yes. Did you,
well done. Nice.
Yeah.
That was very good guessing. Yeah.
I was thinking it doesn't sound like it would be in a limb.
And you didn't.
I was thinking
actually,
my two were brain or spine was like what I was thinking. Brain or spine.
And I don't think anyone got it in the comments. There's some guesses for liver, blood. Well done, Martin.
What is a Betts cell?
No idea.
Yeah, what?
No idea. I might have to Google that one.
When you said it, Betts cell, my brain immediately went to financial trading. Bets, selling, bets. Stuff like that. And then you said, ask.
The action of
found in which part of the body? Yeah. I was like, what? Canary wharf. That's the answer. What?
They are located in the fifth layer of the gray matter in the primary motor cortex. They're giant pyramidal cells. They're neurons. Neurons, basically.
Oh, okay.
They send their axons down the spinal cord, where in humans, they synapse directly with anterior horn cells. I don't know what that means. In turn, synapse directly with their target muscles. Okay.
Yeah, obviously, everyone knows.
Yeah.
So actually, they sound quite important. Yeah.
Okay. Question number 5. Which legendary surrealist artist is famous for painting melting clocks? I think I heard Robin there first.
Yeah, I'm sure Martin knows this too. It's Salvador Dali, isn't it?
It's Salvador Dali. Well done.
Yes.
Melting clocks was his forte for sure. that's all I know about him.
Just love melting clocks.
Imagine that. You're at your careers advice meeting at school. It's like, Salvador, what's your skill? I can paint melting clocks.
I reckon it would be more like, Dali, you're not completing your math homework. All you do is paint melting clocks. You can never make a career out of that. You're never going to do anything with your life if you keep painting melting clocks. Now look at him. Look at me now, Dad. In the comments, everyone was very quick on that one. Baz Carla was the first one in there. With Dali, Filthy Casual next, then Three Hole Punch Mike. Well done, guys.
Well done.
Okay, question number 6, and that is 3-2 to Robin.
Ooh, oh, gosh.
Street artist Banksy is originally associated with which British city?
Let them know over at Warner Brothers. I'm down for it.
Oh, go for it, Robin.
Bristol?
It is Bristol. Well done.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, sorry, for two art questions back to back. That's unfortunate.
Crazy, man.
I didn't know that. I couldn't have guessed. Did Bristol. You know that, Martin?
Bristol. I had two options in my mind. Both began with B. I was going, Bristol was one of them and Brighton was the other. And I was flipping up in my mind between the two.
Yeah.
Easy to confuse the two.
Well done, Robin. There are a few Bristols in the chat from Baz Carla. Again, first in there. Baz Carla's doing very well in this quiz. And Lingham the One also got Bristol. And then there was a couple of guesses with Norwich and Manchester, Liverpool.
Mm.
So, mixed bag on that one. Well done, Robin.
I feel like Lingham the One and Baz Carla might be leading in the quiz.
I think they quite possibly may be.
Very good. Very good.
Question number 7.
Okay.
From what grain is the Japanese spirit sake made?
Oh, Martin, going there.
Sake, yep. I believe it's rice wine, isn't it? Rice.
It's rice wine. Yes, rice is the correct grain. Well done, Martin.
It's going to be more expensive soon. Better stock up.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you tried sake?
Yeah. Don't really like it.
What does it taste like? I don't think I've ever had it.
Yeah.
Is it strong? It's quite strong.
It's quite a potent taste. It's very distinctive, but yeah, not overly
like normal wine, grape wine.
No, it's very different. Yeah,
no, you wouldn't. It's kind of misleading to call it wine, isn't it?
Yes, it's very different. Yeah.
You don't do? Could you drink it as a glass, or is it more of a shot type thing?
You can drink it as a glass.
Mm. Oh, yeah, interesting.
I think do they put rice water sake in? Is it in teriyaki the sake?
Yeah, potentially, maybe. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Mm, interesting. To make it teriyaki sauce, maybe. I could be wrong there.
Yeah. So that is 3-4 now as we move on to question number 8.
Okay.
Yes. Just a quick look at the comments. A Filthy Casual got in there first with rice. Wee. Although Recu 97 was the first person to answer, and they said rye. So that could have been a typo, or they guessed rye. If that is a typo, that's unfortunate because rye is another grain.
yeah. It's close.
It's close though. And then Blade Runner also guessed rice, and Penguins also guessed rice as well. So well done, E3.
Well done.
Question number 8.
Okay.
What is the name of the main antagonist in the Shakespeare play Othello?
That's the villain that Vincent Price played on the 60s show Egghead.
That's the answer. No, it's not. Was it me? Did I get it?
I don't know this one, Robin.
Oh, you do. It's Iago.
It's Iago, yes.
No, I didn't know that one.
His name is James.
One of the greatest villains in all of literature.
That I've never heard of.
People may say. He's also isn't he the villain in a Disney film? Iago? Isn't he in...
Oh, he's the parrot in Aladdin, yeah.
I can't remember which one, though. Like a Disney
Aladdin,
cartoon.
The first Aladdin. It's Jafar, is it? He's played by Gilbert Gottfried. Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
I'll take your word for it. This has gone straight over my head.
I could say anything, yeah.
Well, so we're going on to question 9. Martin, you can still bring this back and draw, though, and as going on to the bonus question. So, you can indeed.
Well, what's the score then?
The score is 5-3 to Robin, but there's 2 questions left.
Yeah, you can do this.
Okay.
You can pull it back.
Okay. Question number 9. I'm just seeing if anyone got that in the comments. Lingam the One seems to be the only person who got that, but they did spell it wrong. They said Iago with an R in that, but very close. I'll give it to you. So well done. Let's move on to question number 9.
Okay. Cool.
In what U.S. state is the city Nashville? Martin's guessing. Martin's going for it.
Nashville, Tennessee.
It's Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Robin?
I did, but I was less certain than Martin, so.
Okay. Well, it's neck and neck as we head on to question number 10. And there were quite a few. Blade Runner got Tennessee and Jimmy Sprinkles got Tennessee. But you guessed that very quickly. Oh, no, sorry. There were a few more. When it was straight in there. Penguins was the first one to get Tennessee. A Filthy Casual next. And Funky Monkey 1235 as the third person to get Tennessee. So well done, you guys. Okay. Question number 10. Martin, you can still bring this back.
Is that right? Are you sure your counting's right? I'm pretty sure it's 5-2 down, wasn't I?
No.
Really, it's 5-4. It feels like I've been destroyed in this quiz.
No, you haven't. No, it's been tight. No. It's been close.
Mm, okay. In the comments, if anyone wants to count them up, feel free to go back.
Okay, question number 10. What is the second largest country in the world?
I think I want to have a go at Egghead.
I think I could hear Martin's very quietly before she was going through, Robin.
Go for it. Yeah.
Goodness. Okay. I am going to guess. It's big, but that's big by population, not big by landmass. Oh, goodness. You say it's pretty big. Canada, I think,
I should specify this is landmass.
Okay. We're going by landmass. Okay.
By landmass. Okay, so we've got the options. USA. So Russia's the biggest, then USA, probably China, maybe. Who else? We've got Canada. Is Canada bigger than the USA? Oh, it's quite big, isn't it? Canada. Is it big enough? Is it big enough? No.
That's what she said.
Wait. Oh, screw it. Let's just go for that. Canada.
That's what she said.
You guessed Canada, Martin.
Yeah, how big's Canada? It's pretty big, right?
Canada. It's the correct answer, Martin.
Damn it. Well done.
Unbelievable.
Well done.
Although, I mean, it seems like it's quite a contentious issue. I think in terms of world's in terms of world's land mass, Russia is obviously number one with 11% of world land mass. China is 6.3% of land mass, which is actually number two. And Canada is only 6.1% of land mass. But I think it's the entire area that they control, so including the waters, territories and waters surrounding it.
So it's politically the second biggest.
That's such a technicality.
Yeah. Because I think Canada has the most coastline, doesn't it?
Mm. The US, United States is also 6.1%, so there must be very little in it.
Okay. Huh. I'll take it. It might be a technicality, but I'll take it.
So there were lots of guesses in the comments for Russia, China, lots of China and in the chat. Mm. Only one Canada, I believe.
There is only one Canada. That is correct.
Penguins was the only one to get that right.
Oh, nice.
So well done.
Very good.
I'm taking it on good faith that no one looked up any answers in the course of that quiz. On a system, every one of you are geniuses.
Anyway, so
well done, guys. But we are at a dead heat. It's 5-5 all as we move on to the bonus question. How often does this happen? Hardly ever.
Very rarely.
Yeah. All the questions.
What a comeback. What a way to bring the quiz back.
Okay. And it's a bonus question. It's a closest wins question as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So here we go. Are you both ready?
Okay. No.
Yeah. I'm going for it anyway.
Well, I was born ready.
I don't care. Okay. Closest wins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neil Armstrong was the first man to touch the surface of the moon. But how many minutes later did Buzz Aldrin also join him on the moon's surface? In other words, how long was he on the moon?
Sorry.
King. Well, he knows the exact time.
I don't know the answer. I just thought I'd buzz in.
Go for it, Robin.
So you had asked the question, right? Right.
I had asked the question. I was going to rephrase it and just say, in other words, how long was he on the surface alone for?
This could be anything.
It really could be, yeah. I just thought I'd buzz in to try to get the first guess. Mm. It can't have been that long. I'm going to say 3 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, I was going to go for a little bit more. Otherwise, 3 minutes. I mean, he did his old spiel, didn't he? Did old... Neil, not Lance.
Did his whole spiel
when he landed.
And Uncle Colin from Dairy Girls.
Yeah. He had to get the monologue while
jumping down. And then, you know, you can do your bit, then I'll come down. So I'm thinking a little bit more. Mm. My initial thought was nine minutes. That was my initial immediate kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
9 minutes. Yeah, nine minutes. Okay, Final answer locked in. Dun, dun,
dun. Drum roll. Martin, you are the winner of this week's quiz.
Okay. How far off am I? Really far.
You're almost right. You got one part of it right. He was there
it 19
for nine.
Minutes?
It was 19 minutes. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Alone for 19 minutes. Wow.
I really like this fact just because I just think imagine being on a different celestial body all on your own.
Yeah.
You're the first person to ever set foot there. And you just stood there looking up at the Earth for 19 minutes. 19 minutes on your own. Almost an entire episode of a US TV sitcom. Just stood there on your own.
19 minutes. That's quite a long time, isn't it? I mean, Buzz is just looking out the window crying.
Please let me out.
Wish I could touch the lunar surface. Yeah. Did Buzz get any time on the moon by himself either? You know, or did...
Not much.
Yeah, they were already going back inside, weren't they?
Because they weren't there for a huge amount of time on the first trip, were they? And they're helping each other do stuff like taking photos, put up the flag, get some moon rock, put the plaque in. And then I guess they, for how long was Neil just saying, Buzz is at the doorway, like, can I come down now? He's like, no, Gotta stay. Stay up there.
Get back. To my moon.
So, yeah. Just looking at the comments, I don't think anyone got 19 minutes. However, Bush was the closest with 20 minutes. So, well done, Bush. Nice. Well done, Bush. Good. Just 1 minute off. And also, Blade Runner guessed 21 minutes.
That's
also very close. And trying to find the next one. I think Recu 97 on 16 minutes was also very close. So, I'll give those three the points. Well done, everyone, for taking part in the quiz. Well done to Martin. You are this week's winner.
Yes, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And I can actually add your point now.
To the quiz leaderboard. So it's a tie, Alex and Martin.
It's 5-5-3 in a dead heat. The winner gets nothing, apparently, because there's no trophy. No trophy these days. I was introduced about 2 seasons ago. Never seen it. Yeah.
Like most weeks when this gets brought up, Alex, I do ask, just send me your address. Send me your address. I'm at Beach House in Scotland. Send me your address.
I'm going to do it right now. Right now. Good. on stream.
Good.
Like, yeah. No, this is, I'm sending it.
I want to put it in chat.
I'm not putting it on the live chat, but I've just sent it, so there's no excuse. Thank you. Everyone here is a witness. Martin has my address. So.
Delete. Cool. Okay. Yeah, I'll get that sent. Don't worry.
Well, actually, no, now the season's going to end with you winning, and I'm going to have to send it back straight away.
That was the plan, to keep on going until I'm winning, then shut the season down.
Oh, excellent. Well,
no, I've got a few to do, though, because you guys have definitely hosted more quizzes than I have. I've been the greedy consumer of many a quiz.
No,
I'm doing next week's and probably a fair few after that, too.
Well, yeah, we've done 13 total, and it's not, we at least 2 more, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember. There's a few more each. We'll work it out before next week.
Yeah.
But thank you, everyone, so much for tuning into this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you're watching on a podcast platform of your choice, then feel free to follow us on YouTube. You may be able to catch us live over there. Anything else we should push while we're here?
I don't think so.
Thank you to our wonderful Patreon supporters and YouTube members.
Yes.
Fantastic.
We've recorded a couple of extra episodes, Patreon exclusive episodes this week that you can find over there in the coming few days. If you're interested in our reactions to George Bush's latest gaffe, as well as our thoughts on everything going on with Elon Musk over the last week, then head over to Patreon and that's what we discussed. Thanks everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.